very old-fashioned thought, telling the truth. All the buyers and sellers in the market at the moment, they are the most informed buyers in the history of real estate and the most informed sellers in the history of real estate. They know everything that's going on. They know all the properties that are sold. They know everything that's unsold. What you've got to do when the market is like this, you've got to be creative, transparent. You've got to be really clear with the buyers. You've got to get the buyers on side so they trust you. And what you've got to do is you've got to find the motivated buyers, because we haven't had to. The market worked the buyers and they needed to get in and buy. So we've lost that skill. And in my view, we've lost a lot of the skills to deal with the seller. You've actually got to get good again at calling buyers, meeting buyers, talking to buyers, and helping buyers get what they want, which is usually a property that they find attractive at a price that they also find attractive. That's what you've got to do. You've got to work your buyers.
You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers, and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology, and more to help you list more, sell more, and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
This week marks Anzac Week, Anzac Day being a day in history that changed Australia and New Zealand forever. A few weeks ago, I caught up with Chris Hanley from First National Byron Bay, who had just come back from New Zealand soon after the Christchurch attacks had happened, an event that will once again forever change New Zealand. So in this podcast, you're going to hear that spirit of Anzac rise again with what Chris has done to bring people from the industry together to help our friends in New Zealand at a time when they need it most. If we're going to talk about Christchurch, we also have to talk about Sri Lanka. And I can't tell you why bad things happen to good people as much as the next person could. Whether it was the innocent soldiers that went off to war in 1915 or the victims and families involved in recent events, the change these events create is profound and far-reaching. Things don't go back to normal, there is a new normal. And so it is in business. Cycles happen, people come and go, and things happen that you don't plan for. But as a leader, you must remain positive, calm at your core, and be able to navigate change. Chris has navigated his way through various cycles and changes in the industry and led teams through challenging times. And in this podcast, we talk about what's happening with RISE Conference, the 80-20 rule in real estate, effective delegation, and how you might plan for a crisis in your business should one occur. For those of you that are fans of Chris and the great work he does throughout the industry, there are still tickets available for RISE at riseconference.com.au, where Chris and a number of well-known faces in the industry will be standing together for a great event with all proceeds going to the victims of the Christchurch attacks and their families. Welcome to the podcast, Chris Hanley.
Hi, Samantha. How are you?
So I should say welcome back, actually, because we've had you on the podcast a couple of times and it's always a pleasure to speak with you.
I have. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. You ask really good questions.
Well, you're definitely one of our favourites as well. And you've just come back from New Zealand. So talk to us about what's been happening over there.
I've had a lot of calls with people since last Friday, and there's a number of things I think I'd like to say on behalf of all of us, the 25 million Australians. I think the first is how sorry we all are about what happened last Friday. I don't know why some cities seem to receive so many more shocks and catastrophes, but Christchurch has had its share. The thing I have noticed talking to people since last Friday, though, and then particularly listening to Jacinda Ardern, who to me has done a remarkable job in what must be the most difficult circumstances. To see her speak the other day at that press conference with what must have been short notice, and to be able to fashion and curate such wonderful, strong words but were so compassionate, to me was an exemplary example of working in really hard circumstances. On the weekend, I also thought that it would be a great idea if we could put together the fundraising conference in New Zealand. And I sent out some text messages on the weekend and got a remarkable response from many of the real estate agents who I know all over Australia and in New Zealand. The positive response from all of them led me to believe that we should pursue the idea of the fundraising conference. I'm now working with many of the good people I know from New Zealand. I just got off the phone from a couple of the CEOs over there. So at the moment, we're working on Australians helping as best we can to raise some money for the families of the victims of the violence in Christchurch.
Well, we do have quite a few listeners and subscribers from New Zealand to Elite Agents. So if there's anything that we can do to help you pull that, again, you will let us know. And our hearts also go out to our compatriots in New Zealand for sure. So on to something slightly happier. You and your team, your wonderful team that we featured in the magazine, were top First National Office in New South Wales, again, for the second year in a row. So what does it take to keep that sort of momentum given the current market conditions?
Good people. It's a good question, Sam, but it's good people. When you've got a tailwind, when a market's going really, really well, you sometimes maybe don't need the same level of people, though some people would argue with that. But when it gets tough and you're into a headwind, it's easy to give up, easy to change industries, easy to get lazy. Up here, it's easy to go surfing. So the most important thing is just good people. I think the second thing is faith, and not in a biblical sense, but you've got to have faith. You've got to understand that if you follow processes, you'll get results. I also think you've got to be optimistic. Last year was our biggest ever year in real estate. When you take into account the fact the market had changed, that was a big result. Last year was probably the best year we've ever had, even though the last 6 months, you know, we were sailing into a changing market and a stiff wind. So they're all the things that you need if you're going to grow a team and get good results in a tougher market.
So what about the next 12 months? What do you see unfolding over the next year?
I think we've got a couple of elections to get out of the way. I think for those of us listening to this who haven't been in real estate that many years, in the old days, when you had an election, people put things on hold and didn't move forward. There's a lot of that going on at the moment. So what I think is going to happen in the first part of this year, I think things are going to be challenging for all of us. My own view is that we'll go through winter and come into the spring. I think the Reserve Bank's probably going to drop interest rates next. I think once the elections are out of the way, people will hold their breath a little bit, depending on who wins. But then I think it'll be back to a good spring. I think the markets all over the country probably going to get a bit of a buffeting, some worse than others. I think the clear picture right now is that some markets are better than others and some suburbs not far from each other are better than others. But I think this year is going to be tough. But the good businesses, and I've just been in New Zealand, as you said, businesses like Megan Jaffe's business in New Zealand are going great guns, and Shannon Whitney's business, Resig Whitney in Sydney. The good businesses are still doing well. It's hard, don't get me wrong, but the businesses that are struggling are the businesses, Samantha, that don't have structure, don't have good leadership, don't have good processes in place, and where there's no faith, where there's nobody believing that you can get good results. I also had another interesting conversation today with someone who works, sadly, in a business where there's a lot of negativity. That's contagious. You've got to have a lot of optimism at the moment rather than negativity.
From what I'm seeing as a leader, that's probably one of the key things right now, you know, that people are looking to their leaders to see what sort of a mood they're in. And it's just so important that as a leader, you've got to maintain that view of the light at the end of the tunnel.
When things get tougher, what happens is it's a little bit like the leader of any organisation. And Jacinda Ardern is a good example. But politicians, CEOs, real estate principals, it's like you're under a magnifying glass. And any of your movements, facial expressions, any of the things you say, they're all magnified. In other words, they seem bigger and louder and, if you like, more powerful. So if you've got fear in your eyes at the moment, if you don't know what to do, if you're not calm at your core, if you're agitated or if you're angry or if you're a blamer, all those things, if you're a boss, it's worse now. They say the most important thing about being a boss, after all the research they've done, is actually be consistent. And I think that makes a lot of sense at the moment too, that your team work out how to adapt around you. But when you're inconsistent, when you're all over the shop at the moment, my favourite phrase is you've got to be calm at your core. You can go off and yell and scream sometimes and do all that, but at the end of the day, all your best people are watching you. And if you lose it, they get seriously worried. And at the moment, there's a lot of fear in a lot of people's businesses. Their mortgages are big. A lot of people are earning half of what they were earning a year ago, and they borrowed all this money. If you're a boss, understand that fear is all throughout your organization, and it's on your job description to keep everybody calm. That's very, very important.
Absolutely. So another part of a leader's job description is to put resources where they're most needed. And in our Transform program this year, we've been aiming to get people to focus on the things that matter using a few different 80-20 frameworks. In what ways do you see the 80-20 rule applying in a real estate business, or what are the things that you think are the skills that both leaders and agents particularly need to hone in on right now to be successful?
The thing to hone on right now to be successful is seller vendor education. End of story. If your product isn't saleable, then you're not going to make any money. The market's not going to make the sale anymore. The prospect of capital gain and a boom isn't going to happen. You've actually got to be creative and focused, and you've got to use truthful persuasion with your sellers to make sure the properties are priced correctly so that people can move. Let me repeat this. If you're running around putting all your energy into stuff other than vendor or seller education, then you are putting your energy into the wrong things. If you don't like conflict, if you don't like sitting in front of people and trying very hard to help them make the changes that in their gut they know they've got to make in order to adjust their price, then you are doing the wrong thing. It's a little bit like a surgeon not wanting to cut somebody open so they can go inside and fix them. There is no shortcuts. There is no way to avoid this bit of the job description. We only do four things as salespeople: prospect, list, adjust, and negotiate. Now, the adjusting, the A bit, P-L-A-N, is the single most valuable thing to do at the moment. But the second thing is, don't stop prospecting. Right, so the two things you should be doing at the moment is finding people who want to sell in this market, because they'll be realistic. And the second thing is to educate your sellers so that their properties are saleable.
Where should leaders be spending their time?
Where leaders should be spending their time is in a similar space. They should be helping their salespeople have great reporting and make sure as a leader those reports go out every week to every seller. You should secondly be making sure that all of your agents have face-to-face meetings where you can, or by FaceTime or whatever, with the sellers every week. The third thing you need to do is help your salespeople, train them around the issue of the dialogue and the questions they need to ask in the conversations with the sellers. The fourth area you got to focus on, sometimes as a boss, is helping your salespeople either by mentoring or training them, or bringing the sellers into your office. If you've got an office with a lot of young salespeople who are willing, but they're not getting the results, not being able to truthfully persuade owners to change their price, then get the owners to come into the office and help your salespeople. They'll sometimes, sellers, listen to an older owner in particular and allow that person to play a consultative role and be advised by them. So all businesses at the moment should be focused by the boss or the salespeople on the same thing, which is a system and a process to educate the owners so the prices can be adjusted to help people move.
What about on the buyer side? Do you have any advice for people having conversations with buyers right now?
Tell them the truth. A very old-fashioned thought. Tell them the truth. All the buyers and sellers in the market at the moment, they are the most informed buyers in the history of real estate and the most informed sellers in the history of real estate. They know everything that's going on. They know all the properties that are sold. They know everything that's unsold. What you've got to do when the market is like this, you've got to be creative, transparent. You've got to be really clear with the buyers. You've got to get the buyers on side so they trust you. And what you've got to do is you've got to find the motivated buyers. All we do is match up people who want to buy with people who want to sell. We're not brain surgeons. We're not architects. That's what we do. So for the last few years, we haven't worked the buyers so well because We haven't had to. The market worked the buyers and they needed to get in and buy. So we've lost that skill. And in my view, we've lost a lot of the skills to deal with the seller. You've actually got to get good again at calling buyers, meeting buyers, talking to buyers, and helping buyers get what they want, which is usually a property that they find attractive at a price that they also find attractive. That's what you got to do. You got to work your buyers.
So, Chris, we've seen market corrections in the past and you've been through cycles. A lot of people who have been in business or have been business owners for any length of time have been through cycles. If the economy were to correct even further as a result of the election or something like that, what would be the first thing that you would do in your business having had the experience before?
I think that's a really good question. There's two types of costs. There's muscle costs and fat costs. I do a very old-fashioned thing. I print the costs out regularly of my business and I sit down and have a look at them. I think if the market turns really badly in some areas, you've got to cut before it's too late is the first thing I'd say to you. You don't wait. I'm not very fond of overdraft or debt. I actually don't like it and don't have any of it. If you've got a lot of debt out there and your costs are drowning you, you've got no choice. So you've got to cut early and you cut fat costs. Now, that can be staff. It can be motor cars, can be rent, but your obligation as a leader of a business is to keep it profitable. The second thing you got to do is you got to look backwards, not forwards. Everybody does the money in their business the wrong way. What everybody does is sit down and they look forward. They make these financial plans and budgets. They're fantasies. Nobody knows what you're going to do into the future. The only thing you base the finances of a business on is what you've done in the past. And how does that work? You look back and say in the last 12 months, you look at the cost of your business. And then what you do is you look at how many sales you think you're going to make in the next year. And then you reduce it probably by 20%. And then you work out the cost based on that simple sum. What that means for a lot of businesses is that their costs are way too high. They're never going to make any money. So what you've got to do is adjust the cost now. If you make too deep a cuts, the worst case is that you're going to make more money, not less money. But if you do the opposite and you don't make the cuts, Samantha, then it probably means your business is going to be in trouble and everybody's going to lose their jobs or you're going to have to close up your business. And that's usually what happens in time like this. The third thing you've got to do is that you've got to go around your office and have a look at who's working hard. If you've got some people working for you, and you're looking at them in a market like this, and you wouldn't give them a job today knowing what you do about them, and they're not putting in the hours, as hard as it is as a boss, you've got to think about those people maybe need to work somewhere else. So they're the three things you've got to focus on.
Yeah, interesting. So is there anywhere at the moment, like we've just talked about cost cutting, is there anywhere where you would actually invest in your business? There are some people that say during times like this that you should invest more in things like customer service or marketing because other people are taking their eye off the ball in those areas.
I think the last 4 or 5 years, we've all spent a lot of money on skills training. For me, the areas I invest in would be in personal development courses, anywhere that people can learn to be a better human being. I think that's usually going to enhance their careers in the next few years. And whether that's communication, whether it's listening skills, whether it's studying body language, EQ, those things, I think that's going to be big. Certainly customer service is another good one. I think that's a great suggestion of yours. All of those are really good. There's also things to invest in. You know, rent rolls are a very good idea. In some areas, people believe they're going to come down in value a little bit, which makes them more affordable. There's good debt and bad debt. Good debt is buying a building. Good debt is buying a rent roll. Bad debt is buying a later model version of a big flashy car. If you're telling your staff business is tough and you're just putting a Maserati into the car park at the back of your office, or if you're over in Europe for 3 months right now, that's probably not the best look if your business is doing it hard. If your business is doing it good, good luck to you. You invest in the things that will have the best impact. And I certainly believe they are communication skills. They're rent roll for cash flow. And sometimes it's training of your staff. If you've got people who in your business need to get extra skills that'll allow you to sometimes save money. There might be graphic designer skills, for example, for one of your staff who's naturally Investum over there, which might allow you to save some money over here. So you've got to be strategic with any investment at the moment and ask yourself, will this money add to the profitability of the business? That's the only question.
Yeah, good advice. Okay, Chris, so this interview is part of what we call the Leadership Diaries, and we've had actual requests for Chris Hanley, so let's get to it. What was your first job before real estate and what did it teach you?
My first job was when I was 11 as a paper boy. He taught me a thing called an assumptive close. I stood in the rain, in the cold, in the middle of winter trying to sell papers and nobody would buy a paper off me. I stood back and waited for them to come to me and they didn't do it. So one day I stood in front of a man called Mr. Woolley was his name, and I put the paper out in front of him. I'd assumed he'd buy this particular paper, which was the Herald, and he took it off me. Apparently there's about 80 different business closes, and I was never smart enough to learn 79 of them. I just stuck with this first one, and it was this. I learned that an assumptive close was a belief on your part with any business transaction that the person on the other end is actually going to do business with you. That's where the assumptive part comes in. You assume and to act accordingly. And I learned that doing that paper run when I was 11.
What does the first hour of your day look like and how does it go after that?
I read. I get up, I make some tea and I read. And then I'll go and exercise, but I read. Now, it could be anything. This morning I was reading the Harvard Business Review. On the weekend, it could be something completely different, and I read all sorts of stuff. I don't just read business stuff. I read science, psychology. I read about football. I read about surfing. I read short fiction. You name it, I read it. But when I get up, I read. If I do that, the first thing and get an hour into that, the rest of my day is really good. I really like learning things in that first hour, and it's also calming for me.
Can you name someone that has had a tremendous impact on you as a leader?
There isn't a single person that's had any influence on me. There's two types of people in the world when it comes to mentoring leaders. There's those who are naturally good at being mentored and go looking for it. And then there's the other fools like me who've needed to make all the mistakes themselves. I've never had a mentor or anything, but I mentor a bunch of other young men and women around the country and love doing it. The great ideas around culture have come from my gut and my heart, but also from a lot of my reading and observation, both through travel, through going to places from Harvard, to going into the best businesses in the country, to talking to people. So the ideas come from all sorts of places for things like culture. But I collect ideas, and as my staff will tell you, they then implement them. I'm often involved in the idea or the original idea and then checking that it's implemented. But I get them from everywhere. I get them from, you know, Cambodia, from a tuk-tuk driver. I get them from a taxi driver. I remember being in Singapore a bunch of years ago in the gym in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. And they got apples in the gym there. And if you walk in the front of my office now, there's a really big bowl of apples. I pinch it from anywhere. So if it works somewhere else, I'll try and make it work here. They don't always work, but I bring them in from everywhere.
Okay, so what's your favourite question to ask someone in a job interview and what does their answer tell you about them?
Yeah, I got a few. Did you have a job at school? What did your mum teach you? And what am I not going to like about you in 3 months? Did you have a job at school? If someone answers yes to that, I nearly always give them a job. The second is, what did your mum teach you? And the third question, what am I not going to like about you in 3 months' time? They usually smile at that. I've had some really interesting answers to that, including one guy fessing up one day to some things he shouldn't have fessed up to. Anyway.
What's one thing or one characteristic that every leader needs before they step into the role?
The Finns have a word called sisu, S-I-S-U. And the Finns have the best education system in the world, and they also one of the bravest people because they took on the Russians in World War II. So I'm prepared to listen to the Finns. I think they're wise people. And this word sisu basically means grit or resilience. When all else fails, when you're a boss, it's a lonely, place, being a boss, in spite of what most people think. And sometimes it's thankless, but at the end of the day, the single most important thing is Sisu, to be resilient, to understand that you win some days and lose. You can't always have it your own way, and you realise that you have to just, when all else fails, keep putting one foot in front of the other, and that's what Sisu is. There's no boss challenge that I don't think we haven't been through, and I haven't been through in all my years now. I'm in my fourth decade. I've been a boss since I was very young, and I was pretty ordinary at the start. But at the end of the day, the single quality that you need to keep moving your business along, to keep it profitable, is to be resilient, to just keep putting one foot in front of the other. So I think that's the most important quality.
What's the best way for you to help a new employee or team member understand the culture of your business?
Culture's caught, not taught. That's why we do adult work experience. We bring people in sometimes for a couple of days before we give them a job. They get culture. People get culture within about 20 minutes of walking in the front door. They get it from the furniture, the way people talk to each other. They get it from the smiles they see here, from the way they're treated, from the way they're listened to and respected. They get it from the dress codes. They get it from the speed with which they see people walk between the desks. They see it, they get it, they feel it, they touch it. So that's how we do it.
So what's the worst advice you've ever heard someone given starting their career in real estate?
Buyers are liars. It's sad. I don't know how many people have joined real estate who would have been great agents if they'd been in a different shop with a different culture. The bottom line is this, that your income in our industry is not limited by anything except by your imagination and your ability to work hard. But if you walk into a shop where people are negative, and that's everywhere, it's very, very hard. Only very special agents manage to do really well in a bad shop. And if you're working in one in a market like this, I don't want to tell you to leave, but if you're working in a place where it's negative, go and find somewhere positive and see the difference it makes to your career.
So, Chris, if there was one thing that you would want the listeners to remember from listening into our conversation today, what would it be?
I think in this instance, Samantha, I'd like to talk to bosses and salespeople who haven't been in the industry for a long time to let them know that there is a prosperous, profitable way and a happy way to work in a hard market. If they're a boss, if they hang in there and focus on the culture and the processes, and if they're a salesperson and they focus on prospecting and they focus on being truthful and honest with their sellers, then in both instances, the boss and the salespeople, they'll prosper. Their businesses will be profitable. I know people are saying this is really, really hard, worse than the GFC. No, it's not. People here have no idea what they're talking about. The GFC up here lasted nearly 5 years. We're not a year into this yet. Let's call it a year. I've been in cycles that have been bad for 7 or 8 years. For people to be saying what they're saying now, and it's the volumes that are most affected at the moment in some markets, I understand, and prices have certainly come back. So my message to people listening, if they're leaders or salespeople, there is a way to be profitable in this market. We did it in between 2008 and 2012. Our market dropped off the edge of the planet, and our market share went up from in the 20s to more than 50. You're a good business. You take market share when the market's like this. You don't lose it. So I guess the message I'd like to give to people out there, there's a way through this. It's profitable. You keep your staff. And here's the other thing. If you know what you're doing at the moment and you're confident, your staff won't leave you and go working down the road. They'll stay with you because they'll sense that you know what you're doing. So that's the message I give to people.
So once again, Chris, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you about all things real estate and leadership. And thank you very much for answering our Leadership Diaries questions. And hopefully we'll catch up with you again very soon.
Thanks, Sam. Nice to talk to you too.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.